as most everyone that's here knows, that we do meet twice a week. We have sessions here in Philadelphia to carry on the work of, shall we say, broadcasting the information dealing with the philosophy of theosophy. Sunday mornings, doors open at 10:30. We start promptly at 11, and we close at noon. In this month of May, we've been doing psychism and spirituality, and we are now on the 12th, being the subject will deal with higher and lower psycho faculties. Next Sunday, we'll be dealing with mediumship versus adeptship. Then on Wednesday evenings, we have a study class. We are continuing studying In the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge, and that starts at 7:45 and lasts till 9 p.m. Now, also on Wednesday, our reference library is open from 5:30 to 7:30, just prior to the meeting. For those of you who don't have books at home, the reference for that evening's class will be in the library, and there's someone in there in the library who can help you with any other types of books that you want to look at or any type of references you'd like to look up. Coming up soon in June, we thought we'd start to mention this, is the Inner Lodge Symposium that we have between New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. on Saturday, June 1st in New York City. We will be having the next symposium, and it's from 1 p.m. to 4:45 p.m. Other than that, that's it on meetings for now. Mm-hmm. Also, we'd like to mention the fact that we're all aware of the declaration that's on the back of the bulletin. And even as it is today, these few little paragraphs tell us a lot. And that the fact that one can be an inquirer, one can be a student of this philosophy, whichever. The doors are always open to anyone. There are no restrictions made to anyone. And here in this lodge and all other lodges, the 28 that are situated throughout the world, the program is primarily the same. It is a place, shall we say, as it says in here, to broadcast the teachings. So it's from these platforms that one will hear the philosophy of theosophy. We don't take part or time in side issues of the day. That is left up to the individual to go to on his own. And also, as we said, it's the same aim, purpose, and teaching that holds each lodge together. And the fact that within time, it's trying to help us understand that the idea of universal brotherhood is really a fact in nature, not just something to be talked about. And with dealing with that, one's learning to understand himself and what his purpose and what he wants out of life. So all are welcome to attend any of our meetings and take part in side issues, as we said, on your own time. All the work that's done at this lodge and any lodge is left up to the individual to donate of his time, his service, or money. All are most welcome, but there are no obligations. Apply. So today, we are going to start off with the idea of spirituality. And within that segment, we're going to talk about the higher and the lower psychic faculties. For most, man's really ignorant of his own powers and faculties. And yet, once we start to study and read about it, we find out that he's the collation of all these potencies, and they're lying latent within us. Everyone has the same. So assuming a specific character that inherent capabilities and that of the divine spirit, that reincarnating ego, has to start somewhere to question and ask. If we look at the idea of spirit is the power to become, and soul is the becoming, that reincarnating ego. And it says spiritual thinking ego is a permanent principle in man. And we will get into that briefly, this idea of the principles. And where do we find it? It is in the seat, in Manas, in the mind, in the thinker, whether high or low. Now, if we understand in the sevenfold nature that the mind, once it incarnates into a form, spirit and matter, it becomes dual. The potentiality is there. It's sort of physical and metaphysical, depending how one thinks and acts within its life. And it is the connection either with Buddhi, that storehouse of knowledge that has been gained, or with that Kama principle, that of desires. So let us briefly just look at this idea of the sevenings. If we understand that there are seven distinct planes of consciousness, that there are seven distinct states of matter, and that there are seven distinct states of action, how many of us know of the full seven? Well, we know of waking, we know of sleeping, we know of dreaming, and maybe the possibility of awareness of that deep sleep state. That still leaves us some to work with. But the fact that everything of the sevening in man, in a way, is the same as the sevening within the universe. So if we look at those different states, and the fact that they are more than we can actually see with our eyes, when we come to this idea of psychic faculties that are in us, in a way, the faculties are there, we will mention them shortly, but how they're used by the individual that's using them makes them higher or lower. They're all aspects of the one. That the powers are not gained also by sitting for development. We've heard of that, where one can go and sit and learn. It has to be a way of life and a way of thinking, and it has to be a gradual process. So if we look at clairaudience, or clairvoyance, for instance, let's start with that one. That idea of clear seeing, inner vision. Clairaudience is that inner hearing. Second sight, we've heard that expressed. But these are all different variations of that one power. Now, in spiritual vision, it tells us in the teachings, it is very rare. One must be of pure heart, devoted to the idea of service, have firm discipline, and then from there, it's a long training process, and the highest altruism must be lived by. and kept within one's nature. So it would seem that before we decide anything about these faculties within us, these powers, we have to decide how and what they're there for. So when we go into that, we can understand that there are different departments in nature, but it's the same one who acts in all these different departments. So the choice has to be made how one wishes to live. And it tells us of this higher nature, one has to really be concerned and take attention to his thoughts, because all our acts and deeds, whether we know it or not, stem from thought. Thought is a thing. So if we keep this in mind, we should be able to understand the correspondence of this whole power that gives us the power to knowledge, and gradually from one plane to another. For most of us, we are only aware in the plane that we are acting in at the time. There are those who can be acting in one plane and be very aware in another. We would say those are far or more advanced beings in evolution. So for us to take the idea of starting first to study ourselves and understand our whole nature, that whole seven principle nature, that nature that is permanent, and that nature that is here with this personality today and will not be back again. So it says if we take virtues and put them into our life, virtues of a higher quality with knowledge, we can reserve and understand in time that we're treading a path leading to the wisdom of all. One of the hints that we find of one of the books that are very helpful in helping us understand this idea of how to use these psychic qualities is Patanjali's Yoga. This will result in spiritual cultivation, it tells us. Cultivate the interior image-making power, intuition, imagination. And one must work upon himself to find out. It's not something we're going to read in a book or hear someone say something about. It has to be done by the individual himself. There are a couple different ideas, that idea of unbroken consciousness, immortality. These can range on a higher level. In the Voice of the Silence, for instance, dealing with this, it says, therein lies, when we're talking about the image-making, intuition, the sum total of all our past experiences. Something comes through occasionally, giving us an inkling of what is our true nature. It comes from our own inner nature. It was born from and drawn from the accumulation of all our past wisdom. It is the voice, quote, of our own spiritual nature, the direct cognition of the truth in all things. So for this idea of the higher psychic powers, let's look at it as higher or lower. It's one set of powers, one sense of potentiality. The higher and lower is made by our choice of use of it. Now we'll look at the other end.
Start off with a quote from HPB in regards to psychism. She says, psychism with all its allurements and all its dangers, is necessarily developing among you, and you must be aware lest the psychic outruns the monastic and spiritual development. Psychic capabilities held perfectly under control, checked and directed by the monastic principle, are valuable aids in development. But these capacities running riot, controlling instead of controlled, using instead of being used, lead the student into the most dangerous delusions and the certainty of moral destruction. So she's very emphatic about, at our stage of development, to not be so concentrated upon learning these powers, some of which were just discussed, and there are more, but that they come naturally with our evolutionary trials and tribulations, so to speak. So we've just heard a talk regarding the concept of the higher psychic faculties. So when we're looking then at the lower, are they different? Are they the same thing? What differentiates one from the other? And we can kind of say that the act is the same, but it's where the motive, it's where the spiritual development is at that point, because we're looking at the motive behind why we're using these faculties. The manus, or mind principle, is the connection between the lower quaternary, the transient, the principles that change from life to life. So mind then connects the lower with the higher, with the higher mind, buddhi, and atma. And as was stated, it can be used in two ways. Even though it's only one principle, we can act towards the kama, or desire principle, or we can look at functioning in a higher way. So there is this duality that we're looking at, and it's this duality then that is affecting those psychic faculties, whether we're looking at a higher use or a more materialistic use. In man, therefore, psychic is a term that can be used for the active middle principles of that being, that which connects self-consciousness with the embodied existence. And these, and as was said in the first talk, these capabilities, these faculties, are dormant in us now. They are inherent in our being. But there are reasons why we can't access them now. And we are stuck in the functioning of our personality rather than the individuality. We are not aware of our true natures as spiritual beings. And over the course of different lives, we have failed to help the lower kingdoms advance on their evolutionary journeys, and we're ignoring the three fundamental principles. So we can see then that we are not, for a large part, looking at that higher nature. And if we could focus more, then those psychic capabilities, the evolution of them, the evolution of the usage of these capabilities, will come gradually. Nature does nothing quick. But we can look at the idea of, if we can function more in the higher, we may be able to loosen the spiritualness of our inner life and be able to access these higher faculties and raise up the lower ones. So the higher psychic powers act on all seven planes of existence, but the lower faculties only deal with the lowest level of the astral. It is that the astral being, that electromagnetic field that surrounds everybody and the whole earth. And one of the differences between these higher and lower faculties is one of attitude or desire. So as we said, if we're looking for personal gain, then that's not the way to proceed towards these the higher faculties. The medium or psychic only sees the dregs of the astral rather than the higher realms. The lower faculties deal with the gross and devilish parts of men that are excited, appealed to, and communicated with. Most of the communication that is passed through mediums from the astral unintelligent is from the astral unintelligent remains of men, or in many cases entirely the production of invention, compilation, discovery by the loosely attached astral body of the living medium. So when we're accessing, when the medium is accessing the astral, it's the lowest level of the astral that's being looked at. And that is where all the dregs, all the negative thoughts, all the evils that are in the world, everything before and in the future are located. So when these mediums think that they are actually getting a reading from somebody who had died, it's not that person. And they are actually using, it is dangerous for them, they are actually using and draining their own psychic abilities. So Master of Wisdom then, when we're talking about the dangers of practicing, he says there is but one general law of life, but innumerable laws qualify and determine the myriad of forms perceived and of sounds heard in the astral. There are those who are willingly blind, such as mediums, and those who are unwillingly blind or sensitives. Unless regularly initiated and trained, no self-tutored seer or clairaudient ever saw or heard quite correctly. So the philosophy would say that if one is truly on a spiritual path, that at some point there will be a teacher that will guide them through this, the gaining of these spiritual powers. And to become a medium physiologically, one becomes disorganized, and the nervous system is negatively affected as well. And another problem is with these lower powers is because it's in the lower astral, one doesn't know if they enter into these types of acts, what is going to be let loose into those passive people. And passivity is one of the main dangers, because once, as was said in regards to sitting for development, the person isn't doing the development. We're looking at self-induced and self-devised means. And if somebody is just sitting in a class and learning how to do clairaudience or clairvoyance, they're being passive. It's not a focused type of process that they're doing. They're just sitting there. And the passivity, the philosophy is very emphatic about not being passive, that if one can focus their minds on spiritual ideas, rather than just sitting and trying to blank your mind, the evolution of your spirituality will be, the speed will be increased and will be stronger. So we would like to finish up. And we think it's chapter 17 in The Ocean and in Answers to Questions. And it's the two things together just give so much information about psychic faculties. And Mr. Crosby states in Answers to Questions, generally persons who become spiritualistic mediums are in a position where they can be deluded because of lack of knowledge of their own nature. They may not necessarily be vicious. What is necessary to operate intelligently on the astral plane is a knowledge of the laws that pertain to that plane of substance. So that is one of the main things, is that, you know, doing these processes, having these faculties, and learning the background to them, not just learning how to do it, but one needs to know the laws that are behind them. Mediums have no knowledge whatever of the laws that govern, are purely passive instruments, and quite incapable of reporting back accurately what may be seen there, or even seeing what in reality exists there as to understand it. There is something vicious, however, where there is a disposition to make use of abnormal powers for money or glory to themselves. And money, paying to have somebody read your palm, or, you know, look at your hand or whatever. The philosophy says, when adding the idea of finances, of selling these things to people, actually makes the lower, we just lost our train of thought. Adding money to it definitely decreases the spiritual aspect of any of these things and makes it more despicable in a way. So thank you.
So do we have any questions or comments? Yes?
When we talk about that psychic faculties are latent in us, or maybe just a little bit awakened at this stage of development, we wonder, maybe, and we're asking this, we don't know, maybe they're more awake than we give them credit for, and we're just not aware of how awake they are. And the example for that would be, you could have two coaches say the exact same words to a team to motivate them, and one may affect them in a positive way, but the other saying the exact same words could flare them up and get these people doing stuff that they never thought. And we wonder, maybe it's the power inherent in the words coming from that individual because his faculties have more power. We wonder.
Well, we definitely agree that the philosophy says that if we didn't have some type of psychic level to us in regards to the faculties, we wouldn't be able to talk to each other. So we all have at least that rudimentary type of power in a way. But no, we all have experienced these things, you know, when you're thinking of somebody and they call, or you run into a friend and you just know that there's something wrong. And especially if people are close, whether it be family, spouse, friends, or whatnot, you just kind of, there's a connection there, and you just kind of know. And we think that, in a way, these are psychic powers as well.
And also, one other thing we were just thinking about is that idea of self-sacrifice, that thinking of others' interest rather than our own. Sometimes this shows through one's personality to another because of that feeling of the interest for another more than for myself.
Well, there's also the fact, like the two coaches that were mentioned, one may have an extremely magnetic personality that really comes from character that's been built up life after life. So they're literally giving some of their energy and power to their audience. We all know that it can be used in two directions, but it is something that has been worked on and is a mental and psychic faculty.
Yeah, I mean, we can look at Hitler. I mean, Hitler, talk about a magnetic personality. There was just something that people wanted to listen to him. But then there was the aspect, you know, there was that evil aspect to what he was putting forth.
What effect with striving to accept all the karma that comes to one, irrespective of how serious and painful it might be, and striving to lead the higher life, what effect would that have on the development of one's powers?
Well, we know that karma affects everything. So if one comes into a life with a lot of, say, baggage, so to speak, we have to deal with the with our duty, with whatever comes to us, we have to deal with in some way, shape, or form. But we do have choices. We do have free will. So whatever is coming to us, we can make a decision based on using mind from a higher aspect or from karma. So the philosophy says that as we develop spiritually, and developing spiritually would be doing what comes to you, looking at universal brotherhood, looking at the idea that we are all part of that one deific essence. So the more we deal with our karma and deal with it on a higher plane, we think that it, we wonder too, the more karma you get, the faster you progress. So we can be thankful for these opportunities to evolve. And as you evolve, the powers naturally come to you.
And they also tell us in the philosophy, we'll never get more than we can handle. And most of us can all think back of situations that we were going through and we thought, this is the end of the world, and yet we're here today to talk about it. So that is an interesting point to think about, too, on our gradual development, because that part of us, that booty part, that storehouse of all past knowledge that's within us, that's when we can rely on our intuitive feelings about things, because somehow that lets us know this is the way. So better to have that effect of going through it and learning from it and not carrying a grudge about it is, in a way, you're on a path of development. Follow up?
Yes. According to the teachings, we never act alone. So the karma that comes to us involves other people. So would you say that if we resolve our problems in an impersonal way, without developing envy and hatred and retaliation and all that kind of business, but striving to learn from our experiences and respective to where they come from, and not worrying about our development, but rather worrying about performing our duties as far as karma is concerned, it would seem to us that we would develop from within without mm-hmm. without listening so much to the voices outside us, but rather from the voices from the world.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's the attitude we should all have.
In 1933, Casey was asked by Hitler what he felt that this man was like. And he said that Hitler has the opportunity to become a great leader for the benefit of mankind, or the opposite. And that was strictly based on his motivations and intentions. And that was Hitler's own will, so to speak, to choose. And we know, obviously, what happened. But my question is, Casey, when he was in a trance, he did not remember anything.
Mm-hmm.
He was simply a medium. And my question is, who was doing the speaking? Casey was a medium
mm-hmm.
who had no idea what he said when he said it until he woke up. And it was read back to him what he said.
Okay.
And my question was, who was doing the speaking?
Okay, remember when we mentioned the idea that there's that sevening of consciousness? And that for most of us, there's only a certain level of height of consciousness that we can reach. But it would seem that the same thing with that astral that has seven different levels, that he was capable of going into a higher level than for the majority of us see, or even a medium or a psychic, way above it. So that he is what we would call more like clear seeing the whole thing. So that was coming from a part of him he wasn't even aware of that he was pulling down. Yes?
Yes, that was interesting. And actually he said that. So it's really not, he wasn't a medium. There wasn't somebody else speaking through him.
It was him.
It was coming through his heart. And he mentioned that in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is going to sound very strange, and we don't mean it to be strange, but whenever we talk about someone in a negative way, we have to look at the bigger picture. The fact is that if the Allies had not set the terms that they did after World War I, Hitler could never have risen to power. So we have to have that as the foundation. Secondly, the German people, in responding to his message, were responding to what was natural to them, to look up to a leader, to respect the idea of a fatherland. So I think we all have to become more charitable about it. And if you read a good deal of the history of what was going on, Hitler was himself mediumistic. And who knows who was in charge of his consciousness when he was in a trance. So we have to take a bigger picture. That soul will have to suffer incredibly because
mm-hmm.
of the causes. But we have to understand there's more involved than just one being.
And in regards to Casey, he never charged for anything that he did either, which also adds to the beneficence of him.
Well, don't we all have that knowledge that Casey had within us? I mean, we've lived thousands of times before and experienced every kind of position, and he just was able to access it.
Yeah, it's interesting because we don't think that there's an answer as to why somebody becomes a Edgar Casey and somebody doesn't. But, you know, when we had a friend just ask us the other day in regards to reincarnation that she would really want to know what her past lives were. And I came back and said, well, you may not want to know some of the things that you did. But we're bringing forward to this life experiences that we and lessons that we have to learn from the past. And so whether we're blocked in regards to accessing that higher nature from whatever karma we're bringing forward, we don't know.
Yeah.
We need to be blocked. Otherwise, you know, we need to focus on what's in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we're learning through karma are unlearned lessons. So, therefore, we've probably all been geniuses before, but genius is an overdevelopment in one direction. So we need to become more holistic in a sense.
And one thing, too, that Mr. Judge has said is that if we dabbled in these kinds of, in this area in the past, that we can actually bring that forward as well and maybe have a little more knowledge of these faculties.
And the idea that we're here because of our, quote, defects, lessons unlearned in many lifetimes maybe before. So if we look at it that way, then we might be able to understand, maybe I don't know it all. Maybe I went in one way too many lifetimes in the wrong direction. And it's a working back. It's trying to get that balance and harmony. And for each one, it comes across. And as far as Edgar Cayce's concerned, he influenced a lot of people by this. For someone as for himself, he could not believe what he was told that he was saying during this time, because the man came from the idea of anything to do with a past life. The man was not that way of thinking in his waking states. So we know the idea that sometimes we have karmic things to go through, and then all of a sudden there's a big change in the personality and life is different than it was. It could be good or better, depending on the individual, as far as balance is concerned. But it's like something has been learned, we move on to others. It's like karmically we have a whole savings account waiting. Yes.
Yeah, so often we hear in theosophy that, it's according to our desires we actually, and acting on our desires with motive, that we kind of start building the future life for ourselves, which is simply the effects of our causes today. Right. In one of the books on Edgar Cayce that was edited by his son, Hewlin Cayce, Hewlin said that one of the readings came through from Edgar, and it was about his past life. And the way he died in his past life, he actually starved to death again in the desert. And in the days in the end of his life, all that would go through his mind, he said, was his desire to be of service to other people. And that was the forefront, that was the thought on the forefront on his mind as he passed away.
And that's the backing of all these ancient philosophies, that idea of self-sacrifice. Live your life for the interest of others, and in time, it'll balance out. Yes?
There's something that just I don't understand fully when we're talking about Edgar Cayce and the idea of mediumship, where he unconsciously allows things to flow through him. To me, that's not something that I would want to aspire to. I believe that the aspiration is to consciously clear out space so that you can consciously watch the things coming through. I mean, that to me is the goal. So to allow something to unconsciously come through you, I don't see how that can contribute to your evolution.
But yet, in a day's workings, unconsciously to this personality, a lot of things are coming through from our higher nature that we don't understand or can't explain. And we have to keep reminding ourselves, he was not a medium. He was not mediumistic. But it's just like one goes through periods of meditation and degrees of meditation where one can have come through them, that higher nature within. that is more of the type that was the type of situation that was going on with Edgar Casey.
It was his higher self that was coming through.
But if he's not conscious of it, you don't know that. So it could be anything that's coming through.
Conscious on a certain state. Remember, there's different states.
In a meditative state, you are supremely aware of everything that's coming through.
But
I think this is the point is well taken, that none of us can really say how Edgar Casey was doing what he was doing. We rely on those we look up to who are of the opinion that he was taking things from a higher plane than we normally get to.
Right.
But we also agree with the speaker who said, isn't the goal to be consciously doing that? Absolutely. But who can explain Edgar Casey and the amazing things he did? I think we always have to remember everything he did was to help heal an individual that he had not even met, that he only dealt with through telephone calls or letters from doctors. So the whole thing was extremely altruistic and loving.
Regarding his unconscious ability to obtain knowledge and situation, that is not entirely correct. He began not knowing where this is coming. He began doing this in a trance, but as he moved forward in his life in his, you know, late 40s and early 50s, he was very consciously aware of the higher states of existence. He would meet people on the street without being in the trance, in a lucid state, tell them, you know, do not do this tonight, otherwise you will die. And multiple times, as he progressed in his life, he became more and more about where he was fully conscious and knew. Now, when he needed to go for certain extended types of information, he did go into a trance. And to answer one of the questions raised, when asked why is it that he's able to do this and nobody else, everybody else is not able to do this, he did answer that question, namely that karmically, in his approximately 10,000 years ago, in 10,000 BC, during the building of the Egyptian pyramids, he was one of the, I don't want to give away the story, but very responsible people in that process. And he also was responsible for writing a section of the Bible. And when he asked, why wasn't I told this? You know, in my, he was told this information in his 60s already. When he asked, why wasn't I told this important aspect of my life? The answer that was given to him is that it would have inflated your ego. In different words, but that was the fundamental.
Yeah, it's Edgar Casey is, I mean, he what he was able to do was incredible. And it is definitely something that we can look at as an example, we guess. And why it was him, we think it's fascinating to speculate, you know, what he had done in the past and what he's going to be able, you know, what will his next life be like?
If I could just a follow up, just really quickly. He also said that we all can do it.
Which is true.
Those were his words.
We have to unblock ourselves.
We talked and heard in the declaration.
Louder, please.
We heard in the declaration independent devotion, the cause of theosophy, to a true realization of the self. And this morning's talks about high and lower psychism. Could you give us a list of those principles, the seven of the universe, and explain to us where you would apply the term soul?
We've heard of
Atma Buddhi Manas as being a trinity.
It's hard to We can't hear up here.
I think what he would like is the definition, Atma Buddhi Manas is spiritual soul. And then we have Kama, the lower, mm-hmm. and that's the human soul. And then you have the body and the astral body and the universal life principle. So it's all soul, but the consciousness, the chooser, the mind in that higher spiritual soul is the factor in incarnation.
Thank you.
And we thank for the comment, but then when we say higher and lower psychic faculties, and the warning given to us by the HPB to be careful during this time of psychism being rampant, what is she referring to there in terms of soul?
Well, we're looking at the idea of mind as being dual. And when and at this stage of our evolution, and a mind is not totally integrated into a, you know, going towards that higher nature. So when we're talking about higher and lower psychic faculties, it depends upon the person's mind and what aspect are they using, whether it's for in the karmic realm, which would be materialistic for themselves, just wanting to do phenomenon, or is it a higher attitude regarding universal brotherhood, doing it for the good of all?
And the fact that it's in the air, shall we say, psychism at that period, at the, this period of time, is running rampant. And all we have to do is go into a bookstore and look in certain areas, and you will not believe the ABCs of how to do this and how to do that that's out there. We have to remind ourselves that we are the captain of our ship. And first, once I understand what parts of my ship needs working on and start to work on them, then we can understand more. But the fact of the matter, there is technically just certain abilities. What we do with them and how we use them make them high or low. And we are the chooser. Way in the back.
So these laws that we don't know of, we get warnings not to dabble in certain areas because of unintended results, and could lead to moral ruin as well, if done unconsciously. But consciously, that would be training in occultism, and one would have to reach a high level of character and development and also have a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it for, hopefully, for the greater good of all.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's
yes.
The process right there.
Seems that the main focus is really, you're talking about the ship, we're the captain of our ship. It's my choice what I do, and if I feel I have to work on myself, it's not that I need to work on myself because I want to advance to a
mm-hmm.
higher level. That is the part that leads into traps. It's if I need to advance to a higher level because I need to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have this focus in my mind, this universal brotherhood thing that should be the guiding thing
mm-hmm.
for everything that we do.
Yes, the last two comments kind of segue into each other, and it is the idea that we're looking to learn these things, these actions, for the good of all, and not for money, not for, you know, just, oh, isn't this cool, look what I can do kind of a thing. And if we do, I mean, there are some, we think one of the things we read mentioned something about sensitives, and those are people that are born with some of these powers, and maybe in the past they've dabbled, and they don't really know what to do with it. And we hear periodically of these people, like working with police departments, trying to find, you know, lost people and whatnot. And the ones that we've always heard about, they don't charge for this. So that's the whole thing, is like, you know, if we happen to realize that there's something different, you know, is to not do it because we want to make money or we think it's something fascinating to do.
Passivity. Mm-hmm. We don't think that we realize. Maybe 3/4 of the day we are passive. We're passive to what somebody says to us or some advertising on television. We read passively. We're not actively thinking and responding. And the worst part is in our own feeling nature. Someone says something to us and we're absolutely sickened or saddened by it. Instead of saying, well, could that be true? If it is, I think I better change. Mm-hmm. If it isn't, it's just their opinion. Instead of being rational and reactive, we are usually passive. And that's the thing we have to watch out for.
Try that one-pointedness that the Buddha expressed, that keeping your mind alert and active, never asleep, shall we say.
Oh, yeah. Let me take one more.
Oh, Michael.
Michael.
We haven't heard from you.
No, we've always wondered that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, so that all of nature has all of these powers that we're talking about. I mean, in the Middle Kingdom, there are certain precious gems that have powers that have effect upon us. Vegetable kingdom, we can communicate to sensitivity and light. In the animal kingdom, one of the most unusual things, if you're around an animal, they either are repelled by you or they're drawn to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, you know, it's thought of our psychic nature, that which we have gathered from around us. Like if we frequent bars, we pick up that kind of influence.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we go into the forest and we sit and listen to nature, that gives us another kind of impression. So this, our psychic nature is I think it should be alluded to that fact in the quotation. But we need to be aware of it and we need not to pollute it. We need to raise it up.
Yes, and there was something we read recently too, that if somebody says something to you and you respond in a quite negative manner, that does something to your astral, so that you're going to be attracting more negativity to you. Just going to read something real quick and then we'll close. It is the science by means of which its adepts are able to, quote, put oneself in the place of another, and thereby know at first hand and infallibly the past, present, and future of any being, and thus aid in the evolution of all nature as well as of particular beings. Dealing with souls, occultism confers not only tremendous powers, but equally tremendous responsibility. The meeting is over.
Good.